Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey, guys. So I know a lot of you have been asking me over Instagram or messaging me about Josh Rosebrook, and he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Yes, I live for his products. And some of the products I would recommend if you were to go to joshrosebrook.com is the Essential Balm Cleanser, which I love. It's very, very soft on the skin, doesn't come off too harsh, does the trick. I also love the Daily Acid Toner, the active infusion oil, and I live for the Vital Balm cream, especially if your skin is really dry, like in the summer, if you're somewhere in dry heat, like Arizona or somewhere like that, this will do the trick for you. It's also just, you know, I always feel hydrated whenever I use his products. Also, if you go to the Instagram at GOTHAMISTA, there is a giveaway for a free 2-ounce hydrating accelerator for any purchase over $50. And that ends on the 18th. So hopefully you can run out and try and get that now or until supplies last. So again, go to joshrosebrook.com or message me on Instagram at Megan Judge or at Judging Megan. I should know my own Instagram account. And follow me and send me your messages and ask me any questions, and I'll recommend some things that I really love with these products. Hi, everybody. Have you heard of Instacart? If you have not heard of Instacart, I don't know where you have been living because it saved my life. I don't have to go to the grocery store. I can get my stuff delivered to my house. And if you go to judgingmegan.com/Instacart, you will get $35 off of your first order if you've never ordered before. So I would say get on there right now and skip your trip to the grocery store.
Hello. So I have a very, I don't know if I would say exciting show today, but I have talked a lot about my husband on this show. I've brought him up pretty much since the beginning. We have been together for a very, very long time. We are currently on vacation right now in Mexico, so we have quite the view. We are recording in separate rooms, and I just am so excited to have him on. Hi, Ron.
I mean, you started off with an insult, so I'm not sure how excited I am.
So, everyone, I am going to introduce my just, like, amazing husband. He's so handsome. He's so fabulous. I love him so much. He's always nice to me. Hashtag blessed. We're so in love.
I actually like this because this is literally the only time you'll ever say anything nice about me.
Yeah, probably true, but not true. So, Ron, thanks for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
I know that you're very busy on vacation, and I had to pull you off.
This is delaying my beach time, but what are we going
to
do?
Yeah. Yeah. So, we just decided to record. I wanted to be able to give you guys an episode this week. And what better time than to record and introduce you guys to my husband? So I'm just gonna get into it, Ron. Ron and I have been together for 20 years of our life. That's a really long time, huh?
Yes.
You sound so thrilled and excited.
Very, very long. It's over 20 years now.
Yeah, it is over 20 years. And I'm gonna interview you, honey. So I want to find out, like, can you tell my audience about your early life?
Makes me tick. You want to know all about what makes me tick?
Yeah.
What was your question?
I just want to find out about your life. I'm going to tell my audience a little bit about what you do and who you are, but I want to find out from your perspective. Just tell me about your early years, where you're from.
And where I'm from. I was born and raised in Southern California in the San Gabriel Valley. Most of my life in West Covina. I had as close to a perfect, happy childhood as one can get. Both sets of grandparents were around and there for much of my life and childhood. And my parents are still together after, golly, like 50 years, I think, at this point. And I did the normal suburban LA, you know, things that one does. I could have grown up in any state in the country living in the San Gabriel Valley.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's very like suburbia.
We've been talking a little bit about Stranger Things this vacation. It's like, you know, the mall, the Stranger Things, you've never seen it, babe, but it's, mm-hmm. Kids in the 80s, like, hanging out at the mall, and that was literally what my life was like, minus the monsters.
Yeah, where you grew up reminds me of the beginning of, like, Poltergeist, where that family lived in that little, like, community. Yeah, it's very... Like
it's where they shot Back to the Future.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. What everyone should know is... Ron definitely had a very privileged life. His parents are, you know, very good parents, loved him. He had a very healthy relationship with his brother. He has one brother, two parents, and was very fortunate to grow up really in a happy family with cousins and extended family. And he's still friends with all of his friends to this day. Actually, we're on vacation with his best friend since kindergarten and his wife, and Ron's the godparent of their son. But what really happened was he didn't really run into trauma until he met me. No, I'm just kidding. but I wanted to find out, because I've kind of talked about you being an actor and why you decided from a young age to become an actor and get into TV and film. So why don't you talk about that?
I've told this story before, you know, on the talk show circuit, babe.
Oh, God. Vomit.
When I was a kid, I don't know. I grew up in front of the TV. I think like a lot of kids of that age. The greatest joy in my life, and I think my family's life, it was like an event every single week to go see whatever new movie had come out at the movie theater, and like there was no place I was happier than, you know, eating popcorn and watching a movie. And, I would leave every movie that I saw living in that space and trying to like live the, you know, pretend I was that character for hours and hours and hours. And I just, you know, people started telling me I should do it. And I kind of believed that I should do it. So I started acting. I think I went out to Hollywood and took my first commercial class when I was like 12 or 13. And I had braces. So they had a showcase at the end for agents. The agent said, come talk to me when you get your braces off. So I did at 15. And that's when I started acting professionally.
And what was your first job?
My first job, like my first real.
Yeah, like your real job, your first real job that you made money on.
Was a Pepsi commercial featuring Madonna. And this was in the 80s. It was probably around 1988. And it was the Like a Prayer Madonna video that was going to be initially released on the Academy Award telecast that year. And I was actually hung out with like another one of the guys my age on set was Steven Dorff. We hung out a little bit and, you know, we all just danced around with Madonna.
Yeah, but that was like that video and the commercial. Did the commercial, it never came out, or it did?
It aired really, really briefly. And then as soon as it aired on the Academy Awards telecast. And then she subsequently released the video where she was kissing the statue of the saint and everything blew up and they pulled it. So I figure she owes me maybe $50,000 to $100,000.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I wish we had that money now.
Madonna's listening, she can write me a check.
Yeah, I'm sure Madonna listens to every episode. So you started acting, you fell in love with it. What then did you start? I mean, I know the answer to all this, but what did you do? You started doing commercials.
So I was in high school at the time, and my parents would drive me out. We were about 30 miles from Hollywood.
Which, by the way, is far.
Very far.
LA, man.
They would drive me back and forth until I got my license, and I would drive myself back and forth, and I would miss, you know, doing fun things. I would miss classes. I couldn't play soccer with my friends. You know, and my very good friend, like a second mom to me, Sandy, who helped me sort of get into the business, you know, had to reiterate to me that you had to make sacrifices. And that was a really difficult thing for me all the time, like trying to grow up and be a kid and do all those things and be a high schooler. And it wasn't always easy to like let that go and go out and do an audition. So I auditioned in high school a lot. Then I went to UCLA and I continued to audition and started getting work mostly really once I got to college.
So when you were like, you said you did a lot of commercials. How many commercials?
Huh?
A lot of commercials. So you were making money at a really young age.
For a kid that age, yeah.
Yeah. So what would you do with the money? Did you like save it up?
I just made it rain.
You made it rain? Did you go like, did you buy like skateboards? Like what did you do with the money?
I don't know that I did much of anything with the money. I mean, I wasn't doing much. I was still hanging out in West Covina. But you know, like, I don't know, I would take my friends didn't have money. We would go to the movies. I'd take them to the movies, or, you know, we bought a boat with some of that commercial money. I put myself through college with that commercial money. I supported, you know, once I moved out from home to school, I, you know, was able to pay for all my own things for the most part. So, you know, it was just all in the service of continuing to both go to school and be an actor. I was never really saving it, but.
Yeah. Well, when you have money at that young age, I mean, I think that that's why so many young actors get so messed up. Cause it's like, you're so young.
Yeah, understand. You don't have, your parents aren't always around. You're hanging out with adults all the time. You're treated like, you know, you're a god. And you have a bunch of money that you don't really need and you don't know how to spend. I didn't really spend any of it. I just lived my life. And I didn't really have a ton of money.
Yeah. So what happened?
Waiting to like cash in on all that commercial money, babe, it's not there.
It's not there. God, I've been waiting for all these years thinking it was stopped away somewhere. So once you did all those commercials, then you were at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your first big role when you were in college?
Yeah, I was doing some TV stuff. I think I did The Nanny when I was in college. And I would say the first thing where I was like, it was like my first lead was the, you know, not the best horror film that's ever been made, but watching it now, it's quite entertaining in like a mystery science theater type of way, was Children of the Corn 3. And I was the lead in Children of the Corn 3.
And that was Charlize Theron's first movie.
If you can say that, I think that she's quite embarrassed whenever they have brought it up. But yeah, she. Mm-hmm. We shot the movie and the ending was terrible. And so they decided to make it more exciting with a big giant reshoot. So we did reshoots. And one night the executive producer, it was night shoots. And he was bored, I think, and wanted to be entertained while he was on set all night. So he brought a bunch of very attractive models to be extras. I think he probably promised them that he would put them in a movie. So Charlize was there, and I think her name was Ivana Milosevic, who's, I think that's how you say her name, was also there, who's actually a pretty successful actress as well. And I tried to save Charlize Theron's life unsuccessfully from the corn monster.
Yeah, that was a really, really good scene.
I did save a lot of lives that day, though, babe, just not Charlize's.
Yeah, well, you did the best you could. But then once you did that movie, that's when the roles started to come in.
Well, I was always working on this or that, and you know, so I was doing a lot of TV, and I do TV movies, and I've, you know, flew off to Vancouver to do a TV movie. I flew off to Florida to do a TV movie. Our Son, the Matchmaker, which is, you know, probably one of the best Hallmark movies ever made. And then another TV movie. And then a year after that is when I got the TV series Legacy, which was my first series that went on the air.
And what was that like?
It was the most magical time of my life, you know, present company excluded.
Okay. You bet. I was waiting for you to say that. So you got put on the series. You were then on the talk show circuit doing like Johnny and Marie. What? You were on the cover of TV Guide. Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, how old were you at that time?
I was 25, I believe, at that time. And it was literally, it was all I had ever wanted. It was quite literally everything I had ever wanted. And I couldn't have been happier to do it. It was, you know, when you were a kid and you dream of being an actor, doing talk shows and interviews and showing up to set every day and traveling is all you ever think about. And that's what I got to do. And it was really, 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 really amazing.
And were you like at that point, were you like, cause you had a billboard on Sunset, were you getting like recognized to people?
Yeah.
When you were?
Yeah, it was weird. Honestly, when it first started happening, it was weird because people would stare at me and I did. And I mean, I grew up being a very, very, very insecure. Like very insecure.
Why were you so insecure?
I don't know. You know, I think that my mother was always concerned about us. She had parents who, you know, I know you know this, were alcoholics and abusive, and so she just really wanted us to be happy. But I think a side effect of that was that, you know, she would kind of put her insecurities on us. Mm-hmm. And I also there. When I was younger, I really, really felt like any success or attention or anything good that I did took away from other people. You know, there's that Marianne, what's her name? Marianne Williamson?
I don't know.
She ran for president. Like,
oh.
Our greatest fear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Like, but it's that we're, you know. I for some reason I can't remember it right now, but like I thought that if I shone brightly, it diminished those around me rather than giving them permission to shine as well. So I I I sort of hid my light and tried to sort of be as inconspicuous as I possibly could until I believed that I deserved to be that way. And so it was weird when people started paying attention. I didn't know how to take it, and I didn't know what they were staring at. And but, you know, interacting with people who saw the show and appreciated it is, I mean, that's the reason you do it, is to make people's lives a little better.
I mean, what's so crazy about it is, you know, just being a kid and wanting so much from a really young age to become famous also and be a working actress. And, you know, I dreamed of being, you know, having a billboard on Sunset like you did, or being on a TV show. And it didn't work out for me.
Well, it didn't work out for me either, babe.
Well, we'll get into that, but it did work out for you. And something like I always like to remind you is like the percentage of people on this planet that have actually like can ever say that they were on a TV show or, you know, a working actor. There's like thousands of people that move to Hollywood every day or every year, not every day, but to pursue acting. And it's something that, you know, you're really good at. And I'm really proud of you that you have continued to pursue it all these years. And even through like all the hard times and the things that we've had to go through together in the 20 plus years. So what actually ended up happening? So you were on the series, and then you did another series.
And the series got canceled. You know, and I just want to say, and that's really the most important thing that I didn't understand at that time, that I understood later, is how fortunate I was to be able to do what I was doing. And you know, I think when you're young and you're successful and people are kissing your butt and, you know, telling you everything you do is great, you don't appreciate it and you don't really have gratitude for it in the moment. And that's, you know, people ask all the time, like, what is the best advice you can give to an actor just starting out? And that is, honestly, that maybe is the most important thing, is just to approach everything with gratitude and appreciate every moment. Because, you know, once I started not working as much, I really started to understand how lucky I was. So anyway,
yeah, go ahead. We both know so many actors, you know, that have continued to pursue the business we're in our 40s for years and years and years. And it's a business of constantly being rejected, constantly being told, you know, you're not good enough, or you don't look a certain way, you don't look a certain part. And what's hard is we have two daughters, and one of them, I'm pretty convinced, definitely wants to go into show business, and we really both don't want that for her, but I don't think we're going to have much of a choice in a few years, because she really loves it.
Right. I would say that, you know, that's the attitude that most people have, is that you're not, you know, they're telling you you're not good enough, or you're telling you you're not pretty enough, or you're not tall enough, or whatever, or you're not young enough. But, you know, once you can let go and realize that that's not what they're telling you, and that this applies to every aspect of life, like, you know, I did every audition, I took that rejection, and I believed that's what they were saying, is that I wasn't good enough and there was someone better than me. But, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people who audition for every part, and only one person is going to get it. Only one person is the guy. And that doesn't mean that all of those people weren't good enough or didn't do a good job. You know, I was lucky enough, you know, after Legacy, I was, you know, the lead in an NBC pilot, and got to be on the other side of the couch. And it's not about being the best actor. It's about just being the right person. And, you know, our very good friend, another guest on this show, Brian Pote, was, you know, that's where I met him. Was the first time I met him was in the audition room for that TV show. And there were a lot of very talented actors who came in the room, and I was reading with them. And then he walked into the room, and he didn't have to do anything, because he was just that. He was the person.
That's so interesting that you say that, because looking back now, you know, I say it but like every episode, so I'm going to say it again. I don't know how many episodes I'm in into this podcast, but I think I'm in like my high 20s of podcasts, and I always say everything happens for a reason. Yeah. And I think for me personally, it wasn't in the cards for me to do that. I was so insecure. Right. I was so like, I do believe this in myself that I had the talent, but I was one of those people that was just so hung up on like, I'm not good enough. And like some of the things that you said, and looking back on it, it's kind of like, yeah, it didn't happen for me, but I think about if I just had the confidence that I do now in my 40-year-old self, and I could tell myself the things that I know now, maybe it would have turned out differently for me. But I also think that I'm not somebody that could have dealt with people staring at me and, you know, like that. Just, you know, that way that people are, where they're so obsessed with celebrities, and it's a very strange world, and it's very weird. And I know that Ivan, like in our earlier years together, we would go, I remember going places and people would recognize you. I remember being in a different country one time and we were eating dinner. We might've even been in Mexico or something. Do you remember this?
I remember.
Somebody was like staring at you, and I was like, why are they staring at you?
We were in Santa Barbara, remember, and Solvang.
Oh, yeah. And I just thought it was so weird. And then you realized like they recognized you from some TV show.
No, I also think that they thought I was someone else.
Oh, no, I don't think that. But it is definitely an interesting life. And, you know, the fact that you have continued all these years to continue to pursue it. So, let's kind of like pivot into a little bit later in life after you had the success as an actor, and then unfortunately you met me and then kind of
it all fell apart. It all fell apart.
Yeah. Should we tell my audience about how we met? And I'll tell my story and then you tell your story, or do you want to tell your story?
No, you can go ahead. Please tell it. Your show.
Yeah, whatever. Because I can always edit stuff out. I've said that. So as like what I've talked about a lot, I had moved to Hollywood to pursue acting, and I was a professional cocktail waitress and bartender.
You weren't really professional.
I was horrible. I was horrible. I literally can't even
imagine getting you like sitting down to dinner or a drink, and you being the person who was about to take care of me.
Yeah, my family still makes fun of me.
I think that auto gratuity was probably invented for you.
Yeah, thanks. That's so nice of you. I know I was horrible at it. But so I met you at that point. I was dating somebody else, somebody a little bit famous, and you became infatuated with me. I'm just joking. I was dating someone else when we met. I met you, Ron and I met at the opening of a bar in Hollywood, right next to the Egyptian Theater. And there was a fashion show going on at the time. And it was like a bunch of celebrities and one of those like, wannabe actresses like me trying to, you know, impress everybody. We were young, we were in our 20s. And I remember my friend Consuela was like, oh, you have to come out tonight. This is like the hottest party. And then we're going to go up to the hills and there's going to be parties afterwards. So I was like, I don't really want to go out. I was into this person that I was seeing at the time.
Who was very, very famous. I was pretend famous, and he was one of the biggest stars in the world.
And so we, I remember going out and I walked into this club and I saw you, and like we looked at each other, and I just remember thinking like, oh my gosh, he's so handsome. I thought, you know, just living in Hollywood, there's just so many people, like attractive guys, women, you're trying to impress everybody. And it, you know, at that time it was like, if I knew that somebody might've been on a show or something, I was like, oh God, they're probably just a complete jerk. Why even waste your time? But I did stare at you from across the bar and I just thought you were very, very handsome.
Hold on. You're finally admitting to this for the first time on your podcast?
I mean, I'm not going to say I was drooling like you were, but I was like, oh, that guy's cute. Mm-hmm. And you were with the co-star from your show Legacy. Mm-hmm. And then I do know that we kind of locked eyes and we started talking and the girl that was with me said, you said, oh, you have such beautiful blue eyes. And the girl that was with me said, thanks. And it's one of my favorite stories.
I know it's your favorite story.
Yeah. And you know, we that's the night we met, and then we started dating shortly thereafter, and we went through, you know, a year of me. It was hard because I was very immature in my 20s. I've talked openly about my issues growing up, and you know, I went through a lot and have severe abandonment issues. And I think that when I was really young, I was in my 20s, I was probably like a teenager, you know, I was like a decade behind.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say now, like looking back on it, and I've probably never admitted this to you before, that it was like love at first sight. It was like probably two souls that have known each other in the past and were probably meant to be. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that, but
no,
that's how
no.
I feel. Okay. You tell your story. Sure.
No, you know, I am a bit fascinated by the whole the reincarnation idea and sort of, you know, like that there's this idea that you kind of, there's a sign that you know, when you agree, like it's your time to meet, it's going to happen. And sure, I would say that probably was. And my story is not too different from yours. We were there. I it was a fun party and me and my friends were there and I was single at the time and ready to mingle.
Yeah, you were.
But I had been mingling and I didn't want to just meet anybody at the time. I was ready to meet someone who was really interesting and worth spending time with. Instead I met you, but you know, no. So I remember I was in the courtyard and you walked out and I thought you were very pretty as well. And we did lock eyes. My story is that you tripped over yourself staring at me and then came over and talked to my friend just to talk to me, which is definitely true.
This is not true.
It is.
Go on.
But yeah, you were a handful.
Mm-hmm.
You were definitely a handful. You were, you're while doing what you did and do it, you know, I think I was listening to another podcast with some famous people on it and they were all talking about like moving out to LA and like their, you know, that process and how hard it is for anyone to make that leap and make that journey. And for you to have done what you did and make it alone, you know, not really knowing anyone and not having a place to land. It's such a brave and terrifying ordeal. But your life could have been a little bit more organized at the time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you ever want to look up the definition of hot mess in the dictionary, it would probably have been me in my 20s. I was very, very into going to the clubs, partying. I was out a lot. I think that when we met, it just was kind of like, I believe that was like kind of my like reel it in time. And I'm grateful that we did meet because you were kind of more like on the straight side than I was. I was the wild one that wanted to party and go to like the nightclubs late and go to parties in the hills. And you weren't like that, which is actually
exhausting.
Yeah. It was actually really refreshing because all the other actors, on TV shows or anybody that I had met. That's all they wanted to do.
Well, maybe because that's where you were.
Yeah, that's where I was, I think. But yeah, I mean, so we met and we dated for like
a long time.
A long time. And I watched you go through, and we went through really hard years in life, mm-hmm. and together. And we, you know, meeting in your 20s, we really grew up together. And I think part of why I wanted you to come on the podcast, aside from being just a fascinating guest,
I am very fascinating.
Just to talk about, you know, that relationships and marriage is not always easy. And, you know, the people that, you know, I always say, like, it's my Facebook life, or it comes across like, oh, our life is so perfect. We have this, we have that materialistic thing, or whatever it is, or we look a certain way from the outside. But, you know, you and I have gone through a lot of stuff in our relationship. And I think it was really difficult for both of us. Like, I walked away from my dream of pursuing acting because I realized that it wasn't going to happen for me, especially then. And I watched you kind of like get jobs. I mean, you've consistently been a working actor from the age of 16 until, you know, 40. I'm not going to say the exact age. And
old.
I'm just always so proud of you that you have continued to work your butt off. I mean, you worked in bars for years and years as a bartender.
I certainly did.
And now, you know, in the past probably 5 years have shifted into a really successful realtor, and I'm super proud of you. But, you know, we had a lot of really difficult years where we went through a lot of stuff together.
That is true.
So do you want to touch on that, or do you want me to?
You can elaborate in any way that you see fit, babe. It's your show.
I don't know. I think that, you know, like something that like I'm so grateful for is like you always have been there for me. And I think like we are lucky because we do have each other and we are best friends, but it doesn't mean that we don't like hate each other and we don't fight. Like, I think I already told you, I don't like you today. Yeah,
probably that happens a lot. No, I will say, you know, when we met, and again, the reason that we're all here right now today in this podcast is because of the things that you went through. And I had never suffered any kind of major loss. I think at that point in my life, the only person I had lost was my mom's father, my grandfather, which was hard, but he wasn't young. So it wasn't like a devastating loss, whereas you had lost a sister and you'd lost your father. And short, you know, when we met, you were still that little girl who never recovered from that loss and what it did to your entire family and the rest of your childhood. And, you know, you were really in the midst of kind of trying to break out of that and become a real like functioning adult. And then you lost Julie and it kind of knocked you back again. And it just seemed, you know, again, you've had to go through so much. And for someone like me who hasn't, it's not always easy to understand where you're coming from. And it's not always easy to understand, you know, the way you react to things and where, you know, I can understand where they're coming from, but I don't live in that sort of mindset. I've never had to, thank God. But yeah, it creates some conflict.
Yeah. And I think too, there's a part of me that I feel resentful, you know, and we've talked about this, about the fact that you haven't, you know, and that's not something I'm proud of. I think that it's something that I think anybody that's encountered a hard amount of things throughout their life, or loss or abuse or whatever it is, it's difficult when they have a partner. I think that hasn't and doesn't understand. And so sometimes we find ourselves, like, especially we're so lucky, you know, we went through, you know, years of being together. We got married. We're very grateful to have our two daughters, 11 and 7, and, you know, just like our family, which we're so lucky to have. But, you know, it's difficult when you think differently, when you've had different experiences in life, and then, you know, you're forced into a situation where you live with the person, and what one's from Mars and one is from Venus.
For sure.
And then on top of that, you know, the past few years, just going through, I've talked about this on the podcast, where I just kind of went to the place of, like, I think it just all erupted. I think all of the major amounts of, like, trauma, abandonment, and then I had the friend situation, which just completely devastated me, just brought it all up to, like, I don't know how to go on,
right.
You know, like, I don't know how I'm going to survive. I don't want to live. And, you know, that's hard. And it was hard on you to have to go through this stuff. And so when you're a partner to somebody that's dealing with, you know, all the issues that I did, how did you do that? Like, how do you deal with that? I know it's not easy.
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm the best example of how to deal with it, because, again, like I said, I don't have a starting point to understand it. You know, I think you yell at me all the time about, you know, me just telling you to snap out of it, which, again, I don't ever tell you to snap out of it. I do encourage letting go of things, which is not your strongest suit. You know, for me, and it hasn't always been easy, and this was part of, like, my evolution as a person and as an actor, and was learning that not everything was the end of the world, and not everything meant that, you know, your life was over. It's like, what was your guest who wrote, "This is not, what was it? This is not your story.
This is not the end." Nina,
which, you know, like, the best. Yeah, so fantastic. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all of these little "this's" are not the end. And, mm-hmm. But I, you know, and I saw this with my mother, who, again, like I said, she went through abuse. She went through alcoholic parents and had a horrible childhood. You know, I don't think that she suffered loss like you did. So it was different. But when she reached, you know, her middle age for then, and I was in high school, she had a very hard time because all of that stuff started to come up. So I recognized the pattern of it happening. And I think it happens to a lot of people who go through hard times, and you spend your 20s pretending everything is okay and that you know everything and you can do everything. Then you spend your 30s, like, getting your life together and, like, becoming an adult and working and raising a family. And then you get to the point where, like, you just can't do it anymore. And it all has to come out because you haven't dealt with it and you've just pretended it wasn't there, but it's all still there. So people have to deal with it, and we spend most of our lives pretending that nothing is wrong and not until it can't be ignored anymore. And it just, there's never a time, there's never a person when that's going to successfully, you know, escape it forever. Until you face it.
So true.
It's not so true. It's not going away. You know, so over the last 2 years has been incredibly difficult. You know, but I'm so proud of everything that you've done and how far you have come. Obviously, no journey is over. And I think there's still a lot of work to do, and I have a lot of work to do, but, you know, I didn't do as good a job as I could have, but I tried to keep everything running until you could sort of get back on your feet, I guess, is the best I can do.
And I thank you for that, because I don't think I tell you enough. I mean, like, how grateful I am for you. And
you don't tell me enough, babe.
I didn't know. I don't tell you enough. And it has been like, that's part of why I started the podcast. So I could just be transparent and real and, you know, hopefully other people out there that are, you know, going through issues or struggling in a relationship or struggling in life and doubting, like wanting to go on. It is so true. And Nina's book, to bring it up again, it's like, this is only a fraction of time.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time because there's been so many fractions of our relationship and our life together that have just been so, so happy. And, you know, we are best friends,
right?
And we are so happy, and right, we do have this amazing family that is all I really ever dreamed of. But I think that people just need to know that life isn't always going to be easy. And I think the more real you are and talking about things, or if you need to be in therapy, everybody can benefit from therapy, I think.
Sure. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, all those things can freeze you, you know, all those little thises and those moments. If you let it, then you just get stuck, right? And I think a lot of people end up.
Yeah. And I think too, we were actually at dinner last night with our friends. And we were talking about a movie or something, and I was telling her about how one time early in our relationship, we would see like a movie, like a sad movie, whether it be like in our apartment at the time or in the movie theater, and I would like break down. Like
the whole night would be over, and you would just go back.
Yeah.
It would immediately take you back to your dad dying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like hyperventilate and I just couldn't breathe. And, you know, it's so true what you said. And I think I've talked about it is you go through life and you're just like, well, I have this to look forward to. And then I have that to look forward to. And then, you know, you have like for us, like I wanted to be a mom and get married so much. And I wanted to like have my baby. And then I wanted another baby. And then you get a dog and then you want another dog.
Want another dog.
I know you don't. Ron is not a fan of.
I do not want another dog.
He's not a fan of Jurassic Park, which, by the way, is the worst behaved dog on the planet. Yeah. But I love her.
Thank God. God, we're in another country from her right now.
Yeah, but you know, it is. It's so true that it's like what you said. It's like continuing to kind of put Band-Aids on things until it erupts, and it eventually will. Yeah. I mean, I did want to kind of like pivot a little bit and talk about you and like what your plans are for the future. Are you planning on like, cause you're still acting. Cause I want to say that also, COVID has been really horrible for actors because there were no jobs, sure. But
look, nothing. The door is never closed for anything unless you let it be closed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an easy business to have longevity in, and I've done it for over 30 years, and you know, I haven't really worked for a while, but that's because I've put my focus elsewhere to take care of my family. You know, which thankfully has gone really well. I would say no, that door is not closed. It's open whenever someone needs me to walk through it. And there's a time when I will put more focus on that and really kind of put my energy into it again. You never, you know, and I know that you know this, once you're an artist, you never stop being an artist. And, you know, it sounds pretentious to talk about it that way, but you know, that's actors are artists. The problem with being an actor is that you can't just go act, right? Like you need permission. You need a stage, you need an audience. Otherwise you can't just go play guitar. You can't just sing a song, right? You can't paint a picture.
I mean, it's true. And like, that's part of like what, I mean, being creative, being an actor, being the way that we are, it's just part of your being,
yeah.
You know, and part of why I was, I was in corporate America. I've talked about this. I was miserable. In the end, I had
It's very hard.
And then I was like, I was going to have a nervous breakdown. And I realized that I had been creative for the entire first half of my life, doing plays, singing, acting. And then I was like, I'm missing that. I'm missing that piece of myself. And to be able to do this again and like interview people and talk to people. And it's like a creative piece of me that was missing. And for you, it's like an actor acts. So just because you're not, you know, working on a show now doesn't mean that you can't go do a play or you can't
sure. And that's, it's always there. It's always there. And it's always in me. And it is hard to reconcile a life where you're not doing it. But again, you know, there are things that I have to do to make sure that we're all still eating and drinking and living and able to things like go on vacation, mostly drinking.
Yeah. Drinking Chardonnay. Yeah.
You know, but it's there and I'm excited. I'm excited for whatever is next because I know that there's something very exciting ahead.
I believe that too. And I believe like as an actor, like I've talked to you about this, like you've evolved so much, like from the time I would watch you in your 20s doing, you know, or even younger when you were doing Children of the Corn 3 or whatever it was, like all of the life experiences have that I think you've gone through have turned you into this, like, you're just a really gifted, amazing actor. And I'm not just saying that because in case a casting director's listening and wants to cast you, like, I really believe that about you. I think I love to watch you work and act. And I obviously think you're the most handsome person on the planet. So
thanks, Bill.
I don't know. I'm proud of everything that you've done career-wise. I'm proud of all of the years that you struggled and, you know, like you were working in a bar and it's hard being married to me because I grew up like a child going to the country club and, you know, going to boarding school and we've had our years of struggling and, you know, I know that nobody wants to hear us talk about our marriage forever, but if there's one thing that I could say about you and just being married is always try to like support each other. And I think that you're the most kind and supportive person I know. And I don't think very many people are like you and you're really special. And I know that you know that about yourself, but I wanted to tell my
friends that. Thanks.
What in closing?
Yes.
So we can have our margaritas on the beach.
It's time for margaritas.
Yeah. What are some tips? If you were to meet like a young kid that wanted to become an actor, What are some tips that you would give them?
Gosh.
Just move to Hollywood.
Act whenever you can.
Mm-hmm.
Find a class that works for you and do it as much as you can. Again.
Have a backup plan? Would you say have a backup plan?
I wouldn't say have a backup plan. I would say it'd be good to get a college degree just in case you need to pivot at some point. You know, with my biggest problem, and I think one of the reasons that I didn't get where I wanted to is I was really bad at taking direction and advice. And that was part of my insecurity and just be open and let it out there. Don't be afraid. Don't just go for it every single time and let it all go. I mean, that's it.
And would you say like work really hard? Don't get distracted.
Always, of course. You know, you can have fun and you can be a person and be a human being and enjoy every second of it. But you know, you've got to respect the fact that whenever you get a job, like there are people relying on the story you're telling, and there are hundreds of people relying on you doing your job for them to live their lives, right? Like, for every one stupid, shallow, self-centered actor on a set, there's 100 people who show up every day to not be famous and to not make as much money as you're making, but just to be a part of telling the story. And that's an incredible, incredible gift.
Yeah. What do you think you're most proud of in life? what are you most proud of?
You're fishing now.
No, I'm not fishing.
Are you talking about in acting or in life?
Just in life. Like, what are you most proud of in your 40-something years on this planet? Are you proud of being an actor? Like, are you proud of the things that you've done? Like,
I don't know that I think of anything like that. I'm grateful for everything I've done. I'm grateful to have, you know, to have you and our babies, and I'm grateful for the friends and family that we have around us. I don't know. I don't think in a way of being proud of anything. I'm just grateful for the experience at this point.
Do you believe in signs? I know the answer to this.
Of course I do. Yes.
What's a sign that you know that, you know, somebody might be around? Like, mine is the butterfly. We all know that.
I mean, and you're about to just really get into it, because the trip to where we're going right now is, it's butterfly migration season here.
Wow.
It's incredible. Like, right now, I'm looking at hundreds of butterflies and also a few birds eating them. Anyway, 11.
That's nice.
11 is my sign. Whenever it's 111 or 1111, it's like a signpost telling me I'm in the right direction.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew 11 was your number.
No, that's whenever cool. I see it, I can just take a breath and trust everything's going to be okay.
And do you believe in, are you spiritual?
Of course I am.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, but you believe in God. One of the jokes is that I've talked about in the podcast is after we're not on this planet anymore, we're not together. Because you said you don't want to be married.
Yeah. Listen, yeah. I'm not locking anything down for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be like George Clooney.
We can hang out. We can hang out in the next life. Or we can be sister and brother, or brother and I don't know what we're going to be.
Because in my next life, I'm going to be with John Mayer.
No, in your next life, you're probably going to be a gay man. You're going to be
I'm going to be going back into from my past life being a gay Jewish man.
Yes.
To once again going into that.
We can
again.
Be brothers, or you can be like my best gay best friend.
Oh my God, that's
that
so
awesome. That is already taken. Come. I've got several gay best friends in this life.
That, and by the way, something to touch on is that's one of the reasons I love you so much, is because, you know, half of my friends are gay men, and most straight men have such issues with,
Most of those friends who are gay men, you met through me.
That's probably, well, Brian, who else?
Steven.
Michael, Josh, no.
Steven.
Oh, Steven and Brian and Michael and Josh were my friends, Josh.
Yes, we met. Okay, Josh. I was at that party that you guys talked about.
Evan, we were on the. Okay, anyway.
All right, anyway, we digress.
Ronald Melendez, I sure do love you. I sure am proud of you.
Thanks, babe.
Love and you. I sure am thankful that we're together in this life, although I guess it's not going to work out in the next life. And in closing, keep living, keep praying, and keep growing.
Hello, did you hear me in the beginning of the show? I hope you heard me, because I'm going to tell you about something called Instacart. If you have never heard of Instacart, where have you been living? I mean, where are you living? Are you living under a rock somewhere? It is the most amazing thing I have ever experienced in my life. I'm not lying, because I love to shop. Everyone knows I love to shop, but I hate to shop for groceries. Like I said, I don't want to see Brenda or Karen in the grocery store.
This way I can avoid seeing them. I can avoid maybe running in my cart into their carts, maybe accidentally on purpose. And instead I get everything delivered to my house. Look out my Ring Video doorbell. And if you go to judgingmegan.com/Instacart, you can get free delivery on any order over $35 if you're a first time user. So I'm not kidding. Go get the app. Go get, do you have an iPhone? Everyone has an iPhone. Get, except my mom. Pat maybe doesn't have an iPhone, but we're working on it. Get out your phone, download Instacart. It's a lifesaver. And again, I don't want to see Brenda and neither do you. Hey everyone. So I don't know about you, but I'm still trying to lose my COVID chubby weight that I have on my body. I'm down a little bit, but I'm going to tell you that I started using something called Goalie Vitamins. The apple cider vinegar vitamins are amazing. They taste good. I feel like I'm doing good things for my body, getting that apple cider vinegar in my body that everybody says is so good for you. And I am down a little bit of my COVID weight. So I'm not going to say it's because of the vitamins, but it can't hurt. It can only help. So if you go to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you look for the deals tab, you can get a deal on Goli vitamins, Goalie vitamins. And I swear by the taste of the apple cider vinegar vitamins.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.